Welcome to Amigo Radio 9.2. We really have to do something about the music, Seth. I feel like I've just walked into a young lady's house and I'm going to fix the cable.
Your camera looks kind of like that too right now, man. Like, it's, well, it's very fuzzy and like, hey.
Hey, that's the way you want it. If this is going where it sounds like it's going, Seth.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're starting a little bit early today because we have some special guests, the Sklar brothers. Norm MacDonald died a few days ago, and I don't know. Norm MacDonald apparently was pretty important to me personally.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of hit a little hard. And I remember I went to Hill when I was in college, and there was a Norm show, and me and my buddies just started laughing the instant he walked on stage.
Yeah.
He didn't have to do anything. And then at some point, I have no idea how he got this. He was talking about like sex on the beach as a cocktail and how it was strange to sexualize your drinks or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he got to a point where he just said like, see this cake here? It's my girlfriend. Yeah, I fucked it last night.
Hilarious.
It's just the kind of thing that burns itself into your head. And then it's one of those things that with my friend group, it's just a touchstone.
Yeah.
And then of course, you know, he's on Conan constantly and he's doing all the things. And I was looking around for Norm stuff and there is an hour long compilation of like his best bits from all the Shaggy Dog stories from stuff, an hour of just late night stuff.
The best.
And so we thought, you know, we should maybe talk about Norm and what made him himself. And our very tenuous Michigan connection here is that when he hosted the ESPYs in 1998, he finished his set at the beginning by saying that nobody could take the Heisman away from Charles Woodson unless he murdered a waiter and his wife. So don't do that.
That's a deal breaker is what he said. That's a deal breaker.
So there's your tenuous Michigan connection. And the Sklars are here to talk about Norm and his life and legacy. How you guys
First of all, thank you for having us on. Love you guys so much. And I love that you want to talk about this. This was, as we were searching around for what was going to be our top take of the week in the world of sports, like we were thinking about certain things. Is it Djokovic?
For our
podcast. We were like, is it Djokovic not reaching 20? I mean, there were lots of things that we could talk about. The NFL season. We just came back to Norm. And we're like, there were very few people who did sports and comedy on the highest level and the way he did it. And he's just one of those few. And, you know, so we can talk about him. And there were like moments where he would just start live tweeting a random golf event. And I got to get there and see what he's saying. Because
and he was gambling on those events at the same time.
Oh, yeah, he was gambling on everything. He had a huge gambling thing that overtook his life in many ways. And he was a very – it's interesting because our paths didn't cross with him that much. Because at the time where we would have crossed him, he became very reclusive. I mean, he didn't drive. He did not drive.
In Los Angeles.
No.
Yeah. No.
Did he have a burrow or something that he'd like?
He would, yeah. He had a tunnel tube system that would just eject him wherever he needed to go. No, he had like a car service to take him wherever he wanted to go. And like, I remember that, like we were at our podcasting network, the first one we did, and someone's like, Norm's coming in today, but he doesn't drive. So his car service is coming in. He has like accepted in knowledge about everything. I'm like, oh, that's why he doesn't just pop out and go to the improv and hang out at night when people are doing sets of comedy. He's fashioned his life in such a way that he didn't do that sort of a thing. And it's a bummer because everyone we know who's known him really well said he's
loved
the greatest.
And that loved is his
the greatest
comedy.
Guy ever. Yeah.
Like, it's, I mean, very hard to find a comic who across the board, all comic, alternative comics, straight up to the biggest comics we know, loved and admired his guy. I mean, for a guy who had a weekly sort of pulpit, if you will, on the Weekend Update on SNL in the early 90s, for him to go in so hard on OJ and really, like, I mean, it was fine. Everyone knows what OJ did, but his joke about how OJ Simpson claimed that Nicole Brown Sisson used to beat him up. And then his joke was, and he also claimed that Nicole and Ron Goldman murdered him.
to me, you talk, Brian, about him. It was the specificity. And like, again, he would get a little twinkle in his eye. And he would, you knew he was going off. You knew he was going off whatever script was there, and you knew something dangerous was about to happen. When he told that whole story, his famous story, I highly recommend people watching it, is the moth story that he told.
Yeah.
It's like
a moth joke. Conan.
And on Conan. And I don't know if he came up with that joke. I don't know if that's a street joke that he's just embellishing. It doesn't matter to me. It really doesn't matter to me, because the funniest part about it is he's talking about this moth what goes into a podiatrist's office. And then he starts to tell this whole story about what the moth tells the podiatrist. And for Jason and I, like, I can just tell you the details that he brings forth in the story, that he's literally holding Conan captive as he's saying, you know, his brother, and he gives him a name like Greg Olinovich.
Yeah.
And he's just giving the most specific details that he went so far with those. And those weren't even getting laughs, but to him, it was all part of the story. Showed that he was on the path. And it's like so brave to like, there are two types of comics in the world. The comics that just go for the biggest laughs that are crowd pleasers. And then the comics who try and be as funny as they can. And you hope the twain shall meet, you know, in that way that you're doing your best material and everyone's laughing as hard. But there's, when you have no regard, it's almost like the guy at the kids' bowling party who used to bowl the ball and then just turn around and walk away and not even watch it hit the pins. You're like, what kind of confidence does this 12-year-old have? That's unbelievable. That's the kind of confidence Norm had at all times. And so, you know, he had that sort of, you know.
Swagger. It was like it was a swagger. And it was also just, I mean, if you talk about that ESPYs 1998 opening monologue, I mean, I would equate it to like when they then lowered the mound after Bob Gibson. Like, once he did that, like, they were like, we're never going to have comedians like this ever again. So then moving forward, you had, you know, very funny people like John Hamm, but then you would have like Drake hosted it, and right, you know, like I want to say it's Louis Armstrong, who's the bike racer, ran
Lance Armstrong.
It's not Louis Armstrong. All right,
both guys only had one nut, but still. Right. Anyway, I digress.
So, but they had started.
That's what happens if, like, you give 110%. You know how they always talk about giving 110%. That's what happens. You literally like just bust one of those things.
You do, but what you get when
Eckstein
Norm
has
did
not
that
owned
set.
That.
I mean, I remember watching that set in '98 and thinking to myself, oh my God, like, ESPN had no idea what they were getting into. They opened the door and like the devil came out. I mean, that's, to me, that's one of my favorite Norm bits, an early Norm bit. Speaking about the devil, is like, you know, the devil tells a guy, you know, to go chop up his family and put him in a duffel bag. Do you guys know this bit?
No, I don't know this
and
one.
So the guy goes home and chops up his whole family, puts in a duffel bag, and comes back to the devil, and he's like, I did it. My family, they're all here in the duffel bag, right here. And then the devil takes a mask off and is like, yeah, it's me, Bob. I and he's like, God, Bob, I guess that's one for you, Bob. Really got me there. I mean, my whole family's in here in a duffel bag. I mean, and he goes so long, so funny. But ESPN like unleashed the fury of a comedian that didn't give a fuck, and he went off, and he went crazy, and he did all the things that he wanted to do. And I think that was the point where ESPN was like, whoa, we got to dial this.
I mean, even there's the famous moment on Conan where Courtney Thorne-Smith is like pimping her movie with Carrot Top. And he's just like sitting there, and Conan just knew. I mean, it's so great because we know, and having Conan, like, you just, Conan is amazing because Conan's brain is always three steps past where you are existing in this moment. It's why he's a great host. It's why he was a great writer. And so he said, what's the name of the movie? And Conan's like, I got the name of the Norm is like, I got the name of the movie right here. And Conan just knew in that. Okay. He's like, okay, buddy, what is it? Carrot Top's the lead of that movie. It's called Box Office Poison. I mean, it just, and she's promoting her movie right there. It's so funny and so good. And he's the second guy. His interview is over. So for him to like lean into this one, and it was hilarious, and it goes down as one of the greatest moments. So you knew that Conan was like, this is amazing TV, but also Courtney Thorne-Smith is never going to do our show ever again.
She spends the whole interview doing this. She's just like hiding from the camera.
It's hilarious and amazing, and he kind of had that thing. I mean, what we'll say about him is he was a great, brilliant joke writer and an even more brilliant joke teller, but he was an amazing writer. He came out to LA, I don't know if people know this, to write on Roseanne. So Roseanne in 1991 or two was like one of the greatest, if not, you know, it was like up there as like one of the greatest sitcoms for writing specifically out there. So you don't just get a job writing on Roseanne coming from where he came from. I mean, you have to be on an established sitcom to just walk in and get that job. And then a year
to not be like a, he wasn't an established writer either. He's a stand up.
No, he's coming out of nowhere. Yeah. He's Canadian stand up. So for him to get that was just to a Canadian to write about a deeply American housewife thing. You have to be an amazing, undeniable joke writer. So then he becomes, you know, an incredible, you know, he goes on to SNL and he's just an unbelievable writer, because you have to be a writer and a performer, as David Spade once. So Spade once told us, and we know David just through doing his show and whatnot, have gotten close to them. I think Spade, like Norm Macdonald, is a singular talent where, like, there aren't people that can do what he does. Like, we've hung out with Spade and, like, he just is so damn funny on every level in his bones that, like, you just see it coming out of him in a way that just regular human beings, it's a superhuman. When you watch like all the Marvel movies, it's like, oh, this is superpower. David Spade's superpower is to be, and it is a power. So normally,
funny, they're saying, so funny.
So Spade, the reason I bring that up is because this is Spade told the story about they're at SNL. It's like the first or second year that they're both cast members. And it's late night on a Wednesday night, the worst night to be writing. And they're writing this thing, and it's going so late. They can't come up with the blow on this. They cannot come up with the blow on this sketch at all. They just cannot do it in any way, shape, or form. They're not coming near it, and everyone's upset. The drugs have worn off. The writer's room is really upset. People are just not happy. And all of a sudden, Norm Macdonald, who everybody thought was asleep on the couch, rises up like a ghost from the dead, rises up and delivers like the best punchline ever. He couldn't even remember what it was. David couldn't remember, but he just remembered the moment, delivers the punchline, and then walks off into the New York night at 4 a.m. They use it, and it was the best blow to any sketch ever. And it was like, that wasn't for him. He wasn't writing for him. He was just writing for some other, he was doing Weekend Update, and he wrote that punch and that blow to the end of the script, the end of that sketch for someone else to do. Just amazing.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I like is all three of us have like tried to like relate a Norm joke, and we all have our Norm impression.
Yeah.
Which is like, there are jokes that you repeat from other people and you just do it like yourself. But when you are trying to give a Norm joke, you have to try to imitate the Normness of it, because the material doesn't work for anybody else in a weird way. He had a way of taking something that, you know, I mean, this is, he did this for the Saget roast, right?
Yeah,
like he deliberately unfunny stuff, and he just kept doing it in his particular way, and it becomes probably the funniest roast set of all time. So
amazing.
Yeah, you know that you have someone who's unique when you can't try to relate anything they said in anything other than your best impression of what they would have done.
Well, so that's the definition of developing your comedic voice. I mean, you know, we all talk about, like, you know, how does it sound? And there are a few people who, you know, you start speaking in a cadence or a way. I mean, now you're doing Norm, and everyone's like, that's what you've tapped into what makes him funny, to where, like, what you were saying about going to see him at Hill Auditorium is he could say anything, like, yeah, so I guess we're here in town of liberals, huh? And they're like, he's not even saying anything, but he's just, that cadence makes you laugh. Well, now it's about what he's built over time, and that voice and that style, it's so specific to him that, you know, very few comics, you can probably count like on two hands, you know, in history, comics who
it's,
have that.
But at the same time, it's inspirational in a lot of ways. You watch him take those risks and take those chances, and you say to yourself, it behooves us to take those chances. So Jay and I were just presenting 3 awards at the Creative Arts Emmys last week, and it's going to air tomorrow night on FXX. The first award, the other two are not going to. We presented 3. We did, the first one's going to air, and it's because they've got to combine like 3 shows into 1 show.
By the way, Rand, I can hear your dog snoring.
I'm sorry, my dog's snoring right underneath me. Anyway, so we're up there, and you know, we wrote a whole bit, and you guys, if you guys want to watch it tomorrow night after Michigan wins and watch it on FXX, you guys can watch it and see it. This bit we wrote about how our last name originally wasn't Sklar. We changed it for Hollywood. Our last name was originally Property. We were the original Property Brothers, and we had to change the whole bit about that. So we wrote that out, and we basically wrote the whole bit out and had to get it approved by the Academy and everything else. So then we're on stage and we have to just deliver, you know, these, this next award. And there's a speech, someone wins, you don't know who's going to win, obviously. And then someone wins. And then there's, to me, like my favorite moment at the Oscars was when Jon Stewart, when 3-6 Mafia won for like won an Oscar, he was just like, all right, just to reset the table for everybody, 3-6 Mafia, 1 Academy Award. Martin Scorsese, 0 Academy Award. Such a great moment. He's playing off it in the moment. It's great. So we're there. And again, this is such a Norm moment. This is such a Norm thing. And we're standing up there and the, I don't know if we're even allowed to say this. No, it already happened because it's not airing. So it already happened. So it, and it's already been said. So The Social Dilemma won an award. Okay. And the guy, you know, that movie, The Social Dilemma, and the guy comes up and to deliver a speech and delivers a very heartfelt speech about, you know, social media and how it's ripping at the fabrics of the society. And we had to make this movie because of all that stuff. And Jason and I are standing out there and in, I guess, like you could even just say in the spirit of Norm, we weren't thinking of it at the time, but it's like, it seeps into you just by being a fan of what it is. We were just like, that was an amazing speech. Imagine how many likes that thing's going to get on social media. we didn't clear that through. We don't know. We basically just crapped all over this guy's movie and this whole thing. And it's like, it felt like a chance. You got to take those swings and you got to take those. And that just felt like such a Norm thing to do in the spirit of who he was.
Well, yeah, you guys were mentioning just his bravery and that kind of stuff. But like, I think a lot of the things, he just gets up on stage and he does what's funny to him.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of the thing is you're just kind of like going around along with him. And the moth story is like, he's clearly like tweaking Conan and he's very much enjoying the fact that Conan is like getting, like looking at his watch. And like,
it's the game within the game, almost. He's telling the story. You talk about this in terms of sports and whatnot.
I think Conan had a joke. I think he was like, how long was this?
Well, I mean,
so Conan's playing.
The thing about that joke is that, like, I'd actually heard that joke before because my grandpa used to love telling the stupid jokes, right? But it's like a 10-second joke. So he was the one who added, like, you know, layer upon layer upon layer just to tweak Conan. But it also kind of went to, I think, what Norm's humor was, which was, like, the sadness behind the humor, right? Like, you need to be at a, like, a kind of a deep, sad place before you're, like, just let it out, right? And he would just pull that string on you and pull that string on you and pull that string, and you're waiting because you know he's there to make you laugh. And he's just such a naturally funny person that, like, finally when he pulls it, it's just like, thank you, yes! Ah!
Yeah, and so it's the details.
Yeah,
and he also was, which is kind of a beautiful thing and a hard thing for people to manage, he was not a filthy comedian. He wasn't a dirty comedian. He wasn't blue. He wasn't in that way, but he was super edgy. So he kind of had, like, he lived in the darkness, like Seth was saying, and he definitely like embraced that. But at the same time, it's not like you could censor it off of TV in many ways, because it was almost like his workaround, and it allowed him to go out to a mass audience, because he wasn't just like, he wasn't Andrew Dice Clay. He was instead, he was speaking, and at times it almost seemed like very vanilla. Like they would joke, you're like a 1935 comic, but the topic and the areas that he would go for subject matter would be super dark. And you're like, wait, he's edgy without being dirty. And for us, that's something we even aspire towards and we love as comics.
Yeah, and the moth joke in particular makes me think of the Aristocrats, because it's the same kind of like shaggy dog kind of thing. There was a movie that came out about that joke. And the thing about that is that movie, everybody who tells that joke, only Sarah Silverman actually does it well. And
yeah,
everybody else, is just kind of like, you get bored with it. And I think Norm had that specific ability to layer in the details. He has that particular like vibe from his delivery, and as you mentioned, like Conan interrupts him like, so what's going on? And then he just pauses for a beat and then says, anyway, tell the doctor. Yeah.
Right. he knew that would get a laugh. Like, again, that's like that's operating on, that's understanding that not even all the things that you're saying, it's the way you use your pauses and the way you then pick up the slack as if nothing just happened right there can be powerful comedy as well. And he just was doing it again. I go back to the thing I was saying about Spade, is that it's just a singular talent. Like there's just nobody else doing what he did. And you understand how truly amazing that is and how truly there are only a few people that can do the things that he did in this world. So when you lose someone like that, it hurts a little bit. I mean, it's like, not to compare him to, but I'm like, why did Kobe's death affect me so much? Why did that bother me so much? Or not bother me, but why did it hurt me? And I'm a father, and of course it was him and his daughter and all that other stuff. But like, and I'm not a Lakers fan. Okay. And I had my ups and downs with Kobe throughout his whole career. And of course, you know, Colorado wasn't a great place for him, and, you know, and the person he did that to. And so like that, I'm not, I have a conflicted past with the guy, but you know, I just, he was a singular talent. Whenever you lose someone like that, it just hurts. It hurts on many levels. And you just don't have that many people who do that sort of a thing. And that's what you hope to achieve in your careers. And so.
And Norm was still funny. Like, Norm was still, it was like, we lost more time with him.
Yeah.
More time of him being funny.
I didn't realize he was sick. You didn't know he was sick, Jay, did you?
No, I did not. No,
you kind of look at him and you're like, oh, you're probably on prednisone. That's why you blew up. Your face blew up the way that it did. But I didn't realize he was sick and for that long.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a certain distance that he brought to his company. Like, it wasn't about himself, really. And
right.
That kind of.
No, but like, again, I just, he does have great, he did a great bit about Mike Collins, the third astronaut to be, this is his stand-up, to make it up on the moon, and just what a raw deal he got, that he had to fly all the way to the moon, but he couldn't go out on it.
Yeah.
And which is just a great joke and a great concept. But to me, the funniest part, and it's the second joke in a series of jokes that he tells about it, is that he's looking out the window at these guys, Mike Collins, on the thing. It's like, yeah. They brought their golf clubs. So that one. But then the second joke that goes, it's like, he says, wait a minute, they brought a dune buggy. They told me I could only pack a certain amount of things. And so what this guy was told he could pack. And it's like, that is very specific, because you think to yourself, okay, astronauts are told, okay, you can only bring this, you can only do this, you can only do that. I'm sure he's like, okay, we all agreed to do this. And then that was almost more of a betrayal that they brought a dune buggy than the fact that he couldn't go on the moon. And that attention to detail about that sort of a joke for us was, again, it goes back, dovetails into what we were saying before.
It's our version of UFR. For you guys, like, we go way deep and we see the strings, and for us, like, there's a lot to latch onto with whatever he did. And I highly recommend to MGo blog listeners to go back and check out
down the rabbit hole. It's a great way to,
it's worth it.
It's a great way to honor him. I mean, again, he wasn't a guy like Sandler, who, you know, had made lots of movies and has tons of money. And, you know, I mean, he wasn't a guy who was like a breakout humongous success, but he had credit, and he was, his comedy and true talent was undeniable on every level.
All right, so I hear you have children you need to pick up from school, so we will release you guys. Thank you for coming by. It's always a delight to have you.
I love seeing you guys, and hey, we'll see you guys in October. We'll be back doing shows at the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase that you guys both helped save that place. Thank you so much.
I cannot wait to see you guys there at the shows and hang out. And
yeah,
let's fill it with MGo blog fans. It's always
that's
night.
October 22nd and 23rd for the Northwestern Games. So,
all right, I'll put it in my calendar.
Put it in. Thank you, guys.
Yep. All right, we got to take an ad break. We'll be back. We're going to talk about. Well, who are we playing? Northern Illinois?
NIU.
The Huskies.
All right. Huskies.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom-printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 9.2. Now we move on to the Northern Illinois Huskies.
Seven point two. Yeah, we've only been doing it that long.
Anyway, so,
can I do our sponsors? Because we kind of
I didn't want to throw them
right in front of Norm.
Let's talk about our sponsors.
Yeah,
what a good idea.
Yeah, so we are sponsored by Underground Printing. UGP has three retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products, many of them in Mays. Check out UGPMichiganApparel.com. We also want to thank our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Home Assure Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, the Raw Power app for iOS by Gentleman Coders, Prentice 4M, and SignalWire, which reminds me we need to set those guys up with the dudes who did the bacon roast, because this is way better than the system we used for that.
All right, so Northern Illinois has one player of special note because they got Michigan State transfer quarterback Rocky Lombardi, which will probably give everybody hives because of last year's game against Michigan State. But, you know, I'm trying to, like, talk to people about what happens when Rocky Lombardi plays quarterback. And almost all the time, it doesn't go nearly that well.
Yeah, I mean, he's not particularly good. There's going to be a couple really good throws per game, but there will be a lot of duds too. And NIU is designed their entire offense to kind of limit him. Their game plan against Georgia Tech was very similar to Michigan's against Washington. They love their running back, Harrison Whaley, and they want to establish it on the ground and not make Rocky do all that much.
Yeah, so he has 17 attempts in the win against Georgia Tech. So you're going into a game against a Power 5 opponent, and you're trying to pull the big upset, and what you do is you run like 80% of the time.
Yeah. I mean, his throws against us last year were not like what, we've watched a few other Rocky Lombardi games. He's not like a pinpoint accurate downfield thrower every single time. So I'm guessing that's not going to be their thing, but like that was kind of what that offense was last year. But Alex, you watched the game this year and said they were running more than half the time, or like 80% of the time.
That was the game plan against Georgia Tech. They don't love their receivers. They play a pretty Harbaugh-like style in terms of using a fullback, multiple tight ends, even though most aren't really receiving threats. But they run mostly out of the shotgun, which is kind of the interesting thing. They use the I formation occasionally, but and the other note too is they play with tempo. That's something to watch for. We've seen Michigan struggle with that in the past. They caught Georgia Tech with too many men at one point. And one tactic I clipped that they like to do isn't just hiking it with 35 on the play clock, but they like to huddle and then break the huddle and hike it within like 3 seconds. Like, you know, clap, everybody runs up and hikes it, and they caught Georgia Tech sort of napping, right? Georgia Tech was sort of thought they had more time than they did. So that's the one wrinkle offensively to watch out for. Otherwise, it's going to be running a little bit of passing, and if Michigan can bottle up the run, there's probably not a lot Northern Illinois can do. Tyrese Ritchie is their only real receiver of note. Not a lot of other threats in that part of the game.
But he's a downfield threat, right? I'm sorry.
Yeah. And their back is a guy who can hit. He's a home run hitter, so he's a guy who you could see Michigan puts a safety in the wrong place at the wrong time. They could get hit for a big gain. And Lombardi does have the ability to go hit someone downfield. He's just very inconsistent. So he's kind of the opposite of the Washington quarterback who really didn't have
a arm.
Big arm to, yeah. to push the ball downfield. So I wouldn't be surprised if Northern Illinois was able to like hit some shots, maybe get a long run or stuff, but it really doesn't feel like this is the kind of offense that's going to sustain drives.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's kind of how they beat Georgia Tech in part. They had a couple good drives. They got their points off those drives, and they didn't do much else. A lot of punts and then a couple long scoring drives, and they were efficient. Georgia Tech was not.
Yeah, and the Wyoming game, they get a big 75-yard run from what's the running back's name again? I forget.
Harrison Whaley.
They get a 75-yard from Whaley. They get some turnovers that set up some short fields. They're able to turn those into points. So it doesn't really feel like, even against opposition that I think we can say is below what Michigan is going to offer. I hope that's something we can say, feeling a little bit more confident about that kind of stuff after Seth UFR, which we'll talk about in the last segment. But, you know, this is going to be a situation where if that happens early, if they hit one of those plays early, it's going to feel bad. And everybody's going to be like, oh, no, not here we go again. Rocky Lombardi is the Daniel Jones, and we're the Washington football team. But realistically, doesn't seem likely that they're going to be able to stay on the field, especially because Michigan's cornerback play has improved, and this will be a test of that. Like, Lombardi's going to throw downfield, and sometimes he's going to be on point, and then when he's not on point, we're still going to get to see, like, what's going on with those zone coverages, and we'll see if they can confuse Lombardi a little bit more than they did last year.
I was kind of surprised that you had, and I bugged you about this too, Alex, that you didn't have anyone signed on the offensive line, because like they lost a lot of guys and they returned everyone from last year. But like last year, their whole strategy was get the ball out of the backfield as soon as humanly possible because MAC teams were just chewing them up.
Yeah, it was a pretty unremarkable game in that regard. Like the offensive line, there wasn't anyone mauling anybody, but nobody was really getting beat. They just ground out a couple yards per, you know, 3-4 yards per carry pretty consistently. And, that was kind of in contrast to the defense where, you know, I was fine with your graphic, but you could have cyaned 7 dudes on the defense.
I usually make it kind of relative to that team, right? So like, you know, and you're,
yeah,
you,
yeah.
We talked about this before with like their, and we'll get to the cornerback too, but like, you know,
Before we start talking about their defense, we need to take another break, and then We're going to come back and do that.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next 5-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Is your online store sluggish, outdated, underperforming? You may be suffering from chronic crappy website disorder. 1 in 3 online stores built by your brother's friend's nephew currently suffers from chronic crappy website. But now, there's hope. Introducing Human Element. Huel has helped hundreds suffering from CCW to turn their online stores around, creating fast, secure, and engaging online experiences that turn visitors into customers and put products back at the top of their search engine game.
Before Huel, I had abandoned carts, browser errors, and poorly animated GIFs. Now, with Huel, I can focus on what I'm actually good at, running my business.
Jeffrey, would you be a deer and pull the Ferrari around?
Side effects may include increased traffic, customer conversions, better ROI, compliments, elation, and early retirement. Why live with the disappointment of chronic crappy website disorder? Speak to your human element consultant today to see if Huel is right for you.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 7.2. We now move on to the Northern Illinois defense, such as it is. As Alex mentioned, not a whole lot of talent. We're talking about, you know, team that has a 270-pound nose tackle, 280-pound defensive tackle, and it looks like it. So they got absolutely paved by Georgia Tech, but Georgia Tech shot themselves in the foot repeatedly, missed field goals, missed opportunities to complete passes, turnovers. But the Yellow Jackets, who were not a particularly good rushing offense last year, put up something like 5.3 yards an attempt, and that's without even bothering to take out sacks and that kind of stuff. So not real encouraging given what Michigan did last week to Washington. If you, a Michigan fan, are interested in seeing a lot of passing, maybe next week against Rutgers. Maybe the week after that against, Wisconsin. Wisconsin, maybe.
Wisconsin's a great pass defense and has problem at defensive end. So maybe we're just going to be a running team.
Like, and then they go to they have Wyoming come in to Northern Illinois and they give up 50. So this looks like a situation where Michigan should probably be able to do whatever they want to do.
Yeah, pretty much. Northern Illinois gave up 50 to Wyoming, who is kind of a man ball team. I mean, Wyoming is not a team known for quick strike offense at all. And then they played Georgia Tech, who they should have given up 50 to probably. Georgia Tech just didn't string drives together despite being able to do a lot of what they wanted to. And, you know, if Michigan wants to run it every play, they'll be able to win this game running it every play. But I would prefer that not to happen because guys will be open too. Northern Illinois lines up their cornerbacks in the parking lot and says, take the 5 yards because we don't want to be beat for 70. Like, this is a game to actually get Cade a few throws underneath, get him in rhythm, and then maybe take a couple shots down the field, especially if you're up 25 or 30. To me, this is a game that you can let him do a little bit more, let him off the leash, because Northern Illinois isn't going to try to lock Michigan down through the air at all.
So, I mean, is there really anybody on this defense that's worth talking about. The defensive tackle you mentioned does get a little bit of interior pass rush, but that seems like...
And then gets blown off the ball on the in-run run defense. I mean, Gandy, their corner, was all Mac last year, but it was hard for me to have any highlights of him when he's playing 10 yards away from the receiver at all times. So...
Yeah, and I think that was one of those things where he had a lot of tackles and PBUs, which is usually not actually a good sign for cornerbacks, even though it looks really nice on the stat sheet. The problem with their defense is that they were bad to start with, and then before last year, because people could transfer and play right away, they just got devastated. And then that happened again, too. So, like, their biggest problem, I think, is the nose tackle. You mentioned he's a 273-pounder. Freshman last year, but like still officially freshman. And like that was supposed to be a guy who was all Mac, who ended up going to, was it Indiana? Someone got him.
Weston Kramer. Yep.
Yeah. So, and then like a guy that Michigan offered, obviously. So that was, and that happened a few other spots to them last year. I think their, the weak side linebacker was another like good player who was good enough not to play for NIU anymore. And like, so it just devastated them. And then Jordan Gandy, they were trying to play him at safety a bit because they were out of safeties. And then this year, I think in like the, it was a few plays into the first game, they lose Devin Lafayette, who was like their playmaking safety. And so like C.J. Brown, you said he was fine, but like that's the guy they're playing in the parking lot. And if you're doing that with your safeties, they're not fine, right? You're doing that because you're afraid that they're going to get beat if you put anybody fast against them. So, I mean, Michigan's going to pave them. It might be another situation like Washington where they just leave their safeties back the whole time and be like, okay, we dare you to pass into our pass defense or put up 400 rushing yards on us. And Michigan seems interested in doing that if given the opportunity.
Yeah, one of the clips Alex put up was a counter play that they ran, and I was just like, oh, that looks familiar, and that looks like extremely bad news for Northern Illinois. Because it was just like a single block on the nose tackle, and he just flies across the formation.
Right.
You know, and Georgia Tech has Power 5 offensive linemen, but not really good ones. And that's probably going to be Zinter. Yeah, if you like methodical dismemberments, I think this is going to be a game for you.
I'm bringing my 7-year-old to her first game for this one. That's the that was my take on NIU. That I'm like, okay, it's time for her to see a Michigan game, and if I need to watch the second half somewhere, I can live with that.
I mean, I don't want to get too cocky because things have gone pear-shaped for Michigan in the past, but just the shape of this game, you know, they're not going to be relying on the pass very much, and it just seems really hard to envision a version of this Northern Illinois defense that can hold up to Michigan's ground game. Like, the scenario that I have is that you get one of those, like, I don't know, it was a Penn State game where it seemed like everything was really well blocked except on every play one guy was missing an assignment. So if that happens, then yeah, you might be able to see Michigan held down by this team. But I, given what they did to Washington, given the precision with which they were able to execute their stuff, how many free hats did you see in that game before 3 or 4 yards downfield? None. So it seems likely that we're going to see a repeat of that, except with, you know, not Polynesian veteran Pac-12 defensive tackles who kind of got whooped on. And you're going to see it with, like, Mac freshman. It just doesn't, it's really hard for me to like figure out what the worst case scenario is here.
Yeah, I like the team that it reminded me of playing was like an old Purdue team that we played years ago when not that many long years, the one that John O'Korn just ripped apart because they were keeping their safeties back all the time, and like John O'Korn, his first read was usually open because it was underneath, and then I looked up the defensive coordinator just to get his picture, and it's the same guy. It's the guy who coordinated that Purdue defense. So we're going against the guy who lost to John, who made John O'Korn look like a great quarterback. So hopefully he can do the same for McNamara this week. Get us a little bit of confidence in our passing game.
All right. Special teams? I looked up the stuff and I'm like, there's absolutely nothing of interest here. So there's not really, I mean, it's just, they're feisty Mac teams. And you look at this and you're like, oh, they beat Georgia Tech. Maybe they're a feisty Mac team. And then you look a little deeper and it's like, not
really. They kind of, I think that the They had a program at NIU for a while, right? And they were consistently, yeah. But the problem is they kept on getting their coaches picked off, and so then his assistant would become the head coach, and then his assistant would become the head coach, and it just happened too quickly. I think the last one went to Temple after 1 or 2 years, and they really had nowhere else to turn to except for Wisconsin's running back coach was their old running back. So I think he went to the Ravens for 1 year. So. You know, he knows all the Ravens guys know him, but I think he was, you know, he was Wisconsin's running back coach, and they figured he could get a running game going there. And according to Alex, they have a running game; they could beat Georgia Tech. So that's
true.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna take one more break, come back, and we're gonna explore what Seth learned in the nether reaches of the Washington game.
John Donovan.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use HomeSure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com, that's HOMESURE lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give Attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
Hey, welcome back to MGO Radio 7.2.
You got it!
Thanks.
Congratulations.
Who is our lovely musical guest this time around, Seth?
Oh, I just closed that window, Brian. Darn it. That was Maxwell Thomas. I wanted to read his self-description. Chicago-based eccentric yacht rocker who produces alt rock inspired by JRPGs.
So you can. All right, so that'll be really up everybody's alley, except for the 50-year-old lawyers, but that's okay. All right, Seth,
I also want to talk about what we're doing right now. We're on Signal Wire, and I wanted to thank them because this is working very well for us. Signal Wire is real-time video technology. It allows you to create interactive video experiences that were previously thought impossible. They give developers access to broadcast-quality, ultra-low-latency video for everything from video collaboration tools for film and TV studios and Fortune 500 enterprises to engaging virtual events like the one for the American Cancer Society, which exceeded everyone's expectations. Try it today at signalwire.com. Use the code MUPPETS for $25 in developer credits.
All right, so Seth, we witnessed the historic paving of a Power 5 opponent.
Yes.
As Washington got absolutely annihilated, and I'm sure your takeaways are going to be pretty much everybody's takeaways, but why don't you just regale us with the amazing numbers that you came up with about the offensive line and running backs?
Yeah, well, the offensive line wasn't perfect, but like Aiden, not Aiden. That's the deep. We'll get to Aiden, but no, Ryan Hayes really popped in this game, and Michigan was basically running off of him, expecting for him to like pave the defensive tackles. And I thought that was the real surprise, because those guys are supposed to be really good, right? That was the Tuli and Taki. We were talking about them. I'm like, oh yeah, those guys are gonna make a bunch of NIL money with their Tuli and Taki shirts. And I think Ryan Hayes. It's just kind of ended that for them, because he was moving those guys, and that created a lot of the space that they were running in early. I mean, everybody else got their attempts, right? Like, all got to like do a lot of kickouts, but there are just so many runs, and that just lends itself to a lot of volume. So, like, you know, Keegan kind of graded out the same as he would if you just increase the volume of his first game. And some of the guys who were going up against, like, they just ran so many different ends out there, and some of them were not very good. So a couple times, like, guys just, like, crumpled defensive end, or Blake Corm did something to a linebacker. And then that guy would get blocked, and, you know, they were getting set up really well. And I thought that the game plan was to try to pave them in different gaps all the time, so they could never really focus on one gap. And as soon as they started trying to slant one way or another, or tried to guess, that's when they just really got gashed. So, I mean, you got to credit the Michigan coaches. They had a really good running game plan. They executed their running game plan exactly how they wanted to. And it continued working, because Washington just refused to do anything unsound, to the point where, like, I wonder if they even had it in their... in the repertoire. Like, Michigan went to goal line defense a couple times in this game before they were in the red zone, and Washington never did anything. Even at the goal line, they had two safeties back.
Wait, what?
yeah. That the Corum touchdown where he, like, squeezes between two safeties at the very end of it. Go back and watch that one. I clipped that one on UFR.
Oh, the outside zone?
The outside zone, where, like, he gets through the outside zone gets him through to the next level, and then he's got 10 yards before there's a safety.
I thought you meant like it was like first and goal from like the three, and they
no. They actually used a goal line those three plays and blew up our goal line offense. So kudos.
Yeah, I mean, so we had kind of a argument about your sole Blake Corum negative, which isn't really important. Like, the important part is that for the second consecutive week, you know, both running backs graded out really well.
Yeah. And I mean, we're seeing it on the field, and like, it feels right that they're grading out this way. They get it in different ways. Like, Corum will, you know, burrow a little bit and maybe like not get full points. Haskins, there's very rarely a time where he doesn't get an extra point, and those are like, you know, he sets somebody up and then drags them for 4 yards or something. Like, there's always something that Haskins is doing every single play to just get a little, you know, not just a little bit more, get like an extra 4 yards. And Corum is like taking a lot more gambles, and then like the one time it paid off so beautifully. He had this linebacker so set up, it was almost like the duo play where you like try to, the point is to actually get the linebacker in your sights and get him to step the wrong way. So he steps towards a gap that is pretty well closed, because he sees Zinter's already turning the end. You know, when he comes around, you either kick that guy out or you turn him based off of what he wants to do. So they did the Illinois thing where, like, they, you know, turned him and they opened up the gap outside. And Corm, for a second, looks like he's going to be stuck, that he's taking the wrong gap and he's going to blow this play. And then jump cuts like I've never seen anyone jump cut since Mike Hart. And all of a sudden he's outside and that linebacker is dead.
Yeah, that jump cut was, I mean, something you watch live and you're like, we're definitely going to have a gif of that on the blog. And Ace created a gif of it, and I was like, I'm embedding that in the post, because look at that. And so everybody's concern is with the passing game. And what did you see out of Cade McNamara?
Not great. I mean, elaborate
on that?
Which four throws do you want to talk about? Because there's only so many. He didn't go downfield very much. Even his screens, like two of his screens got graded less than catchable. That he looked like he was kind of sticking to his first read. And this goes back to like who we think Cade is, right? And we talked about him, Ian Boyd's article about the three quarterbacks and what they're good at. When he looked at Cade McNamara, I'm mostly against Rutgers because that's all the film we had against him. But he's a guy who gets to the line, reads the defense, sees what he thinks is going to be the call, and then just gets that locked in his head. And he's usually pretty good at getting that right. So he's looking at the right guy. But if something changes on him, or if that guy just, you know, doesn't get a good release or whatever it is, he doesn't come off in time to get to the second read, because the second read's usually only open for a few steps, and then, you know, that guy walks into coverage himself. So then after two reads, he's gone. Like that's as far as like his mind is ready to go. It would work fine if he had some superstars at receiver, and I think it worked really fine with Ronnie Bell. And I think that that loss was a bigger loss than we realized, and I think the receivers are a little worse than we're giving them credit for. Not just because their blocking was awful in this game, but it was, you know, there's not a whole lot of routes to grade, but every time that there was, they weren't getting open against Washington.
And, I mean, that is a team that has a high-level secondary, so you don't
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you were not going to run against these. You were not going to pass against these guys in your game plan. That was never going to be the thing. You wanted to see them make a few of the plays and like convert a few more of those third downs when we got in that situation.
All right. So other side of the ball, I think the kind of headline is that Michigan got some big games from their starting defensive tackles, and there are also a number of guys who kind of chipped in here and there with positives. Like I know that you kind of said like Jeter was more of the same just because he had like plus three minus 1.5, but if
no, he was plus five minus two this time, which was
okay,
yeah, and he was not in there as much as some of the other guys,
right? Like if he's doing that in a limited number of snaps, that's like pretty encouraging because you have Mike Morris chipping in, even Jordan Whitley. I mean, that guy's not going to give you more than 15 snaps a game maybe, but if he's able to just blow up a center when he's in there occasionally, that's worth something. So I know we had dunked pretty hard on Washington's, I think, left guard.
Yeah, number 77.
So, but some of that work was going up against the center and the other guards. So I think that there's some encouraging news there about what was supposed to be the weakest part of the team.
Yeah, I mean, you can't take it negative. I'm pumping the brakes so much because my numbers were so ridiculous. Hinton was plus 14 minus 4. And Hutchinson was plus 16.5 minus 2. And
yeah,
Hinton's not going to be plus 10 every week, but he was the guy really getting to take advantage of that guard. And Smith, I think, really, he was plus 16 minus 2. Like that, I'm grading them the same way, but they were doing it to guys. I thought the center was just as bad as the guard. And like those guys were just getting put on skates by Smith and Hinton.
Well, I mean, honestly, we'd take anybody getting put on skates given what we expected, right? Like,
yeah, yeah. I the only reason I'm not like freaking out over this is just because the numbers were so high, right? Like, because the numbers themselves are telling me like that's not possible. So, I went through them again and I watched a bunch of the plays and I clipped some of them and showed people what I was looking at, but I'm keeping open the possibility that this is the worst offensive line we've faced in 2 years.
Okay. it's always good to be cautious about early season results because you never know what you're going to get, especially after the COVID year.
Yeah.
So I think that's fair. But even so, it's probably appropriate to be at least mildly encouraged. And then, you know, you get to the rest of the defense and it's like they didn't have a whole lot to do,
right?
Because Washington didn't want to throw the ball, and you know, by the time the linebackers were getting involved, the defensive line had already done most of the work. But was there kind of anything that stood out from the back seven for you?
I mean, I got to watch the cornerbacks a little bit more, and you know, these are power five receivers, and one of them was a transfer from Texas Tech or Texas A&M. Like Tech, yeah, but like that guy was a four-star originally, so like there was some talent out there. And also Giles Jackson, who we all know and understand how fast he is. The play that I know it was at the end of a half, but like they ran Giles Jackson on a crossing route in man against Vincent Gray, and Vincent Gray broke that up. And like, you know, that's something we had not seen very much from him, and I think we all kind of just imagined he was slow. And then the program, like in the summer, was like, you know, when they could say nice things about Gray, they'd be like, he's actually pretty fast. Probably doesn't have the best hips, and that's going to be an issue for him all the time. But his speed seems to be just fine. And like every time that they showed the cornerbacks in coverage, he was with his guy, no matter who it was. And then Green, he ended up a plus 10, even though he gave up all these big plays in this game, because I just cannot grade him if he's getting his hand on the ball when it's in the receiver's hands. Like one time he's in the receiver's chest and both of his arms are in between the receiver's arms, and the receiver managed to get it like in the crook of his elbow. And then there was another one too where he is up there catching it with the receiver, and this receiver kind of rips it out of his hands. So maybe like he needs to work on how he plays it at the end. But I mean, what do you want out of your cornerbacks other than being there? And like, is it just luck, or is there something to, you know, making plays balls there?
my philosophy is there. If you're there and your hand's on the ball, then you've done something good, and eventually you will be Jordan Lewis instead of freshman Jordan Lewis, right?
Right. So. Right. that's where I was getting to, but people were not happy that I gave him so many points. And then Rod Moore kind of got into his first game, and that was the first time we got to see him. I know it was like three plays, but the three plays were all high-volume plays. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, one of them was the touchdown where they're in zero coverage, so he has no help, right? And he's on a fade, and he does give up a couple of yards to get that thrown, but by the time that ball is in the air, he's made up all the ground. Like, his speed was not a problem against that. And then if he turns around, and he had time to turn around because he was in phase with the receiver, he has just as good a shot at catching that as the receiver does. And once again, it was contested. And then he had, like, one really bad play earlier. We gave up a 3rd and 15 on a cover three, and that was just freshman in zone coverage, didn't quite know when he was supposed to drive. And then at the end of the game, he, like, very nearly had a pick six. So, I mean, that for a debut, everyone's debut is going to be a plus two, minus three kind of day, or minus five mm-hmm. kind of day in this case. But, like, that was a good debut. That was, like, somebody that I think is going to be a player.
All right. Well, I think that's about covers it. Like, did we see anything from the linebacking core that stood out to you? I thought you were more enthusiastic about Josh Ross this week.
I was, but Josh Ross was getting easy jobs and doing a good job of them. But he got to blitz a lot, which, you know, it's not new to us that Josh Ross is a really good blitzer. Sometimes he kind of took a gamble and ended up on the wrong side of the block and let the quarterback escape a bit. But it was, I mean, when he can play aggressively, he is a good linebacker. And, like, in this game, he was allowed to play aggressively.
All right. We're out. TF.
Boris is a mayor and a land surveyor with plans of his own. He hates Aruska, he hates a vodka, banned from his home. He hates Aruska,
Ruska,
vodka, he never drank a single drop. He hates Aruska,
Ruska,
vodka, this poison he swears to stop. He's singing la da 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 da. Boris was visited by demons in his head, and they said, bring me Ruski vodka, or your son may soon be dead.